American businesses need more skilled workers. How do we find the talent? How do we go about developing it? And how do we create opportunities for everyone in our society to get a good job? You're listening to Work in Progress. I'm Ramona Schindelheim, Editor-in-Chief of Working Nation, a nonprofit media company telling stories about the future of work, the future of education, and closing the job skills gap. Work in Progress explores the rapidly changing workplace. We talk with innovators, educators, decision makers, people with ideas and solutions for today's workforce challenges. November is Veterans and Military Families Month. At Working Nation, we're taking this time to celebrate the vast potential of our ex-military.
Veterans are a beautiful and amazing large group of individuals from various depth of service and length of service, various service eras, various ethnicities and heights and races and backgrounds. And for that reason, we need to better understand this group.
Joshua Wilson is Corporate Relationship Manager for America's Warrior Partnership, or AWP. It's a nonprofit that empowers community to empower veterans. I recently spoke with Wilson at the Warrior Community Integration Symposium in Atlanta. We'll hear that conversation later in the program. But first, Jim Lorraine is president and CEO of AWP. He's also a retired Air Force officer and former flight nurse. When we talked at the symposium, Lorraine explained how AWP works with communities on a local level to help them connect veterans with the resources they need.
We believe that, and we know from our work, that 90% of veterans' issues can be solved locally. And it's just a matter of knowing where the resources are and knowing what the veteran needs. In most communities, there are anything from 20 to 40 veteran-serving organizations. But I think the misnomer is when people say, well, it's got to be a veteran organization, the reality is that veterans are citizens. And so then when you look at what the community-based programs are, there are the hundreds and, it depends on the size of the community. If you take Minnesota, Minneapolis, there's thousands. The big piece there is that there's plenty of capacity. It's just a matter of the shortfall is not the amount of services, it's the shortfall is knowing who the veterans are. And, we see that 15% of the veterans are seeking services, and they're pretty well known in the community. The other 85% are living their life. They're working full time. They're busy with their families. They're community leaders. They just don't tell anybody that they're a veteran.
And because of that, because they don't tell anyone, are they shortchanging themselves on some services that are out there?
Yeah, I think they are. There are services that are available for veterans, but the other thing I'll go back to say is that 85% of veterans aren't looking for services. We have an annual survey, and the top three things that veterans are looking for nationwide are recreational and sporting opportunities, connection to other veterans, and volunteer opportunities. That wasn't housing, that wasn't employment, that wasn't access to mental health. Most of the veterans that are out there are really doing okay, and they're looking for ways to give back. There was a great study that was done a couple of years ago that showed that veterans volunteer at a 90% higher rate than non-veterans. So it's just a matter of how do you connect to these veterans, and then how do you plug them into opportunities that are relevant to what they're interested in. Yeah, my favorite thing that came out of the symposium was the camaraderie and the collaboration and the networking, and how well people who knew each other, rebonded, how new people were able to assimilate into the other groups, that was big. And that's really what we try to get to, is to get people to work together. And the first step in working together is building a relationship.
Tell me about the network and how that is going to help even further connect people.
Sure. So the network was created because there was a void between community-based organizations that knew the veterans and knew what they needed, but lacked the resources, and national programs that had the resources but didn't know who the veterans were. And there was no connective tissue between the two. The network is that connective tissue. So communities who have needs come to the network, we then connect them to the resources, or we connect them to the national nonprofit or national service provider. National service providers transition down back into communities. It's really the flow goes north and the flow goes south.
So on a broader issue, you know, Working Nation talks about jobs. So, and we talk to a lot of people here, and employment is an important issue. Mm-hmm. What have you observed of veterans who are talking about the biggest issue that they're facing in jobs?
So the biggest issue veterans are facing in jobs that I hear of is sense of purpose. They've gone from leading a unit in combat, or they've gone from leading a team that's doing logistics and supporting a greater good, and then they may have a job that you don't see the bigger impact. You don't see, you know, the profit and loss on a, you know, right? The profit and loss isn't really purpose generating. Whereas when you're serving the military, the accomplishment of the mission is really the purpose. So I see veterans who go into the workplace, they're looking for something bigger than themselves. And a lot of the times it's just not available. That's not what they do. That's why I think there's a high desire to connect to other veterans and a high desire to volunteer into something else. So full-time job, means to an end, volunteer job, returning to a purpose.
I think we all noticed that a lot of these veteran-serving organizations are run by veterans themselves. Does that speak to that idea that they want to continue serving?
Yeah, I think it does. So it's in the military, you're taught it's not about you, it's about us. And I think the nonprofit world is really, it's not about you, it's about us, and how do I give back? And the nonprofit organization is a way to do that, is a means to do that. But there's some great nonprofits out there that are serving veterans that are not run by veterans. And they're very, very good. They're very good. You know, the military-connected family members are fantastic at it.
What was your military service?
I joined the Air Force as a nurse, officer, and then served 23 years on active duty as an Air Force nurse who moved into special operations, and then served the last part of my career more in the special operations operational side. And then that was my military. Retired from the military, and then the day after I retired from the military, I became a federal employee in the same organization doing the same thing.
Was there any thought of going back to nursing when you left the service?
So in the 1970s, when I was growing up, my mother and my sisters were nurses. And my mother said, you're going to be a nurse because the unemployment rate's like 21% and you can always get a job. So I went to nursing school. I always had that. While I served in the military, I moonlit in the local hospitals, mostly in critical care to refine my skills. You just didn't get that access to the critical patients in the military that you do in civilian. So to keep my skills up, I always worked as a nurse. As the deputy surgeon at Special Operations Command, I worked as a staff nurse on a coronary care unit in Tampa, Florida, to keep my skills up. And my wife is also a nurse, Air Force nurse. And she always made sure that I was keeping my skills up.
But you didn't decide to do that when you left the service?
But I did stay in nursing. So this is, you know, public health approach, community, a holistic approach to solving veterans' issues. It is a nursing approach. So I feel like I'm still being a nurse because I'm looking holistically at the veterans and their families and what's the best. What best can we connect them to improve their quality of life? That's the goal. And if you think of a nurse in a hospital, you look at a patient in a bed and their family at the bedside, and you think, how can I best provide services to them to improve their quality of life so when they go home, they never come back to the hospital? You know? So it's the same thing.
Jim Lorraine, CEO of America's Warrior Partnership. I'm Ramona Schindelheim, and this is Work in Progress. We'll be right back. the future of work is changing. Are you ready? If you're not yet familiar with Working Nation, let me tell you a little about us. We're a nonprofit media company made up of seasoned journalists, producers, business leaders, and educators. Our mission is to bring awareness to the impact changing technology is having on the workforce. A lot of people are talking about the problem. At Working Nation, we're focused on solutions. We're looking at the programs that are out there, and we're talking to the people who are working to close the skills gap, the gap between the skills employers need in a workforce and the skills workers actually have. We do this through Working Nation videos, articles, live events, and of course, podcasts. All of these and more can be found on our website, workingnation.com, your source for all information on the future of work. The annual Warrior Community Integration Symposium brings together business and community leaders to share best practices and connect with the resources out there for veterans. This year in Atlanta, I met up with Joshua Wilson, Corporate Relationship Manager for America's Warrior Partnership. He told me why he believes this event is so important.
So the symposium is important because it gives us an opportunity as veterans and business leaders to connect to the most diverse group of people that are protected in the entire country. Veterans are a beautiful and amazing large group of individuals from various depth of service and length of service, various service eras, various ethnicities and heights and races and backgrounds. And for that reason, we need to better understand this group. We are researching right now at America's Warrior Partnership veteran suicide and how to prevent it. Our rule and motto is one is too many. And so we are completely dedicated to going through every bit of research and every single person that we can get to be involved. So that could be a military connected person, that could be an organization that's willing to do some financing, that could be a research group, for example, the University of Alabama. That's one area. My area is the corporate area. We want to specifically study recruiting. We want to study retention. And we're using people who are already academics in the field, and we're trying to put their research into application. Some of the ways that we do that are by connecting with family members. Military-connected parents, for example. There are lots of people like my own mother who they have their son or daughter go off into military service and they get deployed and they don't have anyone to go to. And they often bear a significant sacrifice, right, just like anybody else that's actually over there because they're losing someone that's really close to them, maybe permanently, maybe for longer than expected. Sometimes they don't know the status of their soldier or airman. And so it's really a huge deal to take care of those folks. So the symposium is important because it brings together all these different interests. I mean, everybody, whether it's a corporate interest, a research interest, whether or not it's someone who wants to serve active duty or someone who wants to serve veterans. Every different type of person is here, from the nonprofit to the for-profit, from the government relationship entities all the way to the individual relationship entities, and we want to bring them together. I mean, you know there's 50,000 different, roughly 50,000 different IRS registered nonprofits, and the average military veteran probably can't even name two or three of them. Right. And so if we don't have these types of group meets and these types of reach out sessions and we don't brainstorm, we're never actually going to reach real military veterans. And so I think that that's what we're doing. I hope that's what we're doing.
And your key area is corporate hiring and retention. So one of the numbers that we saw was that within, I believe it's 2 years, most veterans move from their first post military job to another job. So with that in mind, what is the retention problem?
The retention problem is a transition problem. there are so many things that exist in the military world that don't exist in the civilian world. And there's a lot of people who are working against that. IVMF and Wounded Warrior and SHRM, all these different groups that you'll see come up, the Veteran Jobs Mission, people that are here, they're addressing that problem. That problem, the problem of transition, is it comes down to details that aren't separated. So one example is there is this thing called the VMET, Verification of Military Experience and Training. Virtually no one knows about it. The government already has a document that they give military veterans, and they say, this has got the recommended college courses that you should have college credit for already. This is your skills, and this is where you can fit in. Most employers don't know about it. I advocate, and I hope other people do too, that employers get a translator that takes VMETs and scans them directly in. DD-214 is the same way. I mean, I've got friends right now who are getting out right now in 2019 who have resumes that aren't developed because SEPs and TAPs is only a couple days. And I know that they're changing the legislation on that. But that's a huge deal. A veteran that has led people, led in combat, that has all these advanced skills, they're getting out of the service, they have a resume, and it hasn't really been developed the same way that someone has been repeatedly redoing it in college for 4 years, and they don't seem competitive, but they really are. The VMET is supposed to be this thing that will help that, right? But the VMET's not there. That's just one example. So the problem with retention is really a problem of transition translation, right? And so what we want to do and what we're aiming to do is work with the researchers and the companies to bring them together and to really open up the conversation. I mean, veterans are proud people. And they often don't tell. I mean, I never really disclosed my veteran status when I originally started looking for work because I didn't know if it was going to hurt me or not. And I didn't ask for help on the resume because I thought, well, people look at me as a warfighter. I'm not about to ask them how to write a single page, right? So it's just, it's an interesting battle in terms of we have to reach both sides. We need to reach veterans so that they know that the employers understand that they're not necessarily going to be these masterful scribes, you know? And even SHRM said it, like, veterans don't necessarily excel at selling themselves. They're not dishonest, right? The military, the entire culture from the Air Force all the way to the Marines is all about being very straightforward about what you expect and what you have to offer. So if you've only worked 1 week on a specific thing, you say, I've worked 1 week on a specific thing. A civilian, on the other hand, might say, I've got some experience in Salesforce, right? And they might have looked at Salesforce once. They might have typed in and logged in once. They may not have actually, you know, built it. And so I think there's a huge difference. And that translation is one that actually marks more integrity for the military veteran. They have integrity because they're being honest, per se. But, and it doesn't mean the civilians are worse. We want employers to know these things. We want employers to understand them because the more they understand them, the more they can utilize them. And there's this tremendous skilled labor shortage. Military veterans are a huge chance to really bolster that and maximize, you know, our employment numbers. We have that option. There's still lots of people to be taken advantage of in terms of bringing them in and giving them meaningful work.
This is Work in Progress, and today we're focusing on connecting America's veterans with the jobs of the future. I'm Ramona Schindelheim, speaking with Joshua Wilson. When I asked Wilson to describe himself, he started with the title he feels is the most important.
So Josh Wilson is an American citizen first. I always view myself as that first. I am a Marine, once, always is. I am a Georgia licensed attorney, and I am a representative of America's Warrior Partnership and military veterans for all the companies that partner with us and all the military veterans who are looking for work and their families. That's who I am. That's my profession. And maybe who Josh Wilson is in a more personal sense, country boy. That's it.
Tell me how you went from last in your high school class to where you are today.
So I never really had a sense of efficacy when I was in school. I didn't quite understand the importance of it. I mean, obviously there are elders and there are teachers and coaches who tell you, oh, you should reach out and do your full potential and you should do the best you can. But it never really meant much to me, to be frank. And part of that is because I always saw myself as someone who would probably always stay in the country and stay not in a deep poverty. My family did amazing things to take care of me, but in in that area, in a rural area with a rural mindset, which is just more simple, and it's labor focused. It's not necessarily focused on paperwork and conversations and interactions and building things, things that you might find to be more abstract that are all over the place in the city because that's where the universities are. The military is the reason that I went from being in the country, sort of limited opportunities. There's only a few places to work. To a place where I could go to undergrad and pursue a business degree and a law degree. And it's really because of being able to see the full perspective of how big the world can be. Going to Africa, going to Iraq, even going to California were these things that were absolutely mind-blowing for me. And they really made me want to find out how much more there could be. And now I've kind of hit this point where I can't stop learning and hoping to find more. And it's just really cool because I feel a responsibility to other service members. It's like, I want you not just to go to the military and deploy a few times. I want you to go to school wherever you want to go. I want you to lead where you want to lead. And I think that if there is someone who nods you in the right direction, such as a JROTC instructor that I had, I mean, the sky's the limit, right? It really is. So I hope that I hope that beyond the corporate part of our initiative, I hope there is more, and there has been some already, veteran-to-veteran interactions. You know what I mean? Where it's just me, and I'm telling the veteran, you can do anything, and here's some things I've done. You don't have to do what I did, but you can do anything that you want. And it's one thing to hear. It's another thing to have somebody kind of show you. And I think that's what happened to me, right? That instructor nodged the way. Then I was in the Marines, and the drill instructors and the staff sergeants and the various people, they would tell me about their lives. And just once you know the world's big, you want to see it.
Are veterans underemployed because of their inability to express what skills they learned in the military?
No. Veterans, because they're so diverse, it's hard to say one specific thing that encapsulates the issue. And that's something that comes across me. There are plenty of veterans who, especially officers. Officers are taught to be oral advocates for themselves and others. So a military officer, I was enlisted, but I've learned as I've met them, military officers are very good about explaining what's going on with them, what's in their head, and what they need for other people. And I think that that often makes them not only great leaders, but it makes them very good in that sense. Whereas enlisted individuals are very good at focusing on a specific individual task, mandating that task, and then leading their units. And then obviously more senior NCOs, it starts to blur the line as you get farther in your career. But I wouldn't say that's the problem as in capital D, all caps D. I do think it is a problem, right? I think it's a problem, and it's not one that's easy to fix. When you got 4 years of undergraduate education, and that whole time you're being taught how to write, how to cite things, how to organize paragraphs, how to think and how to read, your whole mindset is about making a masterful document. In the military, some people don't even have any interaction at all with significant documents except for sign. So I think that that the big thing is not going to be a translation of skills. The big thing is going to be formalized education as a part of TAPS. That's what I'd like to see. It doesn't have to be super long, but it needs to be longer than a week. Right? It needs to be significant.
Is there a stigma around veterans, especially those who might have seen action, where hiring managers might be worried about having them in the workforce?
Yes. Yeah, no, there is a stigma. There is a stigma around military veterans who have potentially, and whether or not it's true is irrelevant, but potentially experienced combat in terms of employers believe that they have to deal with an extra set of issues, right? And then they go into a cost-benefit analysis. Well, this person may have anger issues. This person may have invisible injuries. Sorry, this person may have invisible injuries. This person may have a very specific mindset, and I can't mold them. I have heard those type of things from employers before, and I would say that you don't need to go into the cost-benefit analysis. Of course, if you do, you might say, well, military individuals are, they're very strong and they can lead and they understand unit cohesion and they can see the bigger picture and they will actually show up on time and be clean and be prepared, which are actually increasingly rare traits in a world dominated by individuals who, you know, go to school for 6 years and they don't work much. So they might be extraordinarily skilled in some ways, but not actually ready for work. Anyway, it brings me back to the stigma. What I would say to employers is, if you believe that there is a stigma about military veterans that can't be overcome, you need to meet more military veterans. Because everyone struggles. Post-traumatic stress, post-traumatic injuries are something that anyone can experience. Any person who has ever witnessed a trauma, who's ever been a victim of a crime or been in a car accident, or has simply saw something extraordinarily horrific as a child, those people may have recurring memories, they may have nightmares, they may have headaches. They're all human, right? And they all can still do great things, and some people do even better in spite of the things they went through. So I think that it's extremely short-sighted, and it is an issue, but with a little bit of introspection, maybe, and a little bit of time with real military veterans, I think that's easily overcome.
Work in Progress is produced by Working Nation, your source on the future of work. This November, we've been focusing on veterans and military families. I'm Ramona Schindelheim, and my guests today were Joshua Wilson and Jim Lorraine of America's Warrior Partnership. You can learn more about their organization at americaswarriorpartnership.org. And you can find even more job training and other resources for veterans and military families at our website, workingnation.com. Next week, we talk with three C-suite executives to find out what their companies are doing to attract the skilled workers they need. Barbara Humpton of Siemens USA says it's about more than just a salary.
Now, at this moment, even more than a well-paying job, what young people and their parents want is a meaningful job, a job that will fulfill a true purpose.
To hear more about the future of work and workers, subscribe to Work in Progress wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks to our producer, Annie Chelsea, and executive producers, Joan Lynch and Melissa Panzer. Our theme music was composed by Lee Rossevere and licensed under Creative Commons Attribution License 4.0 International. See you next time.